Welcome back to the Ink Sink. I am Annie.
I'm Kaylee.
And this is our book and lit podcast for the lit kids of books.
Literature. Books.
I think that worked. I think that was cool. Great. I'm hip, actually. I think that we really need to remind ourselves how hip I am.
We cracked the code, Annie.
Anyway. Welcome to 2024, Kaylee.
Hi. You know what? We did it. We made it another year, and we're doing great.
How possibly?
How thing?
How did we get here? I have no idea. I just woke up here. I don't know what's happening.
You know, I'm pretty sure hypnosis was involved, probably.
Absolutely, for sure.
Some dark curse.
Yeah, that forces us to be alive and know and be known.
Corpse animation.
Absolutely the case.
Resurrects. Or the Ray zombie.
We're dead?
Ray zombie.
Wait a minute. This just turned into a whole different thing. We're dead now?
Annie, you've been playing Baldur's Gate 3 for however many weeks.
Yeah, I have. I've not done the necromancy stuff yet, though. Oh, okay. It's very involved, and I keep my necromancer far away from me because he's a weirdo.
That's fair.
He weirds me out.
That's fair.
He's weird.
That's fair. I've just been killing dead stuff in everybody's favorite 10-year-old game, Skyrim.
Oh, yes. I mean, kill those dead people for sure. They why are they even awake? Go back to sleep.
They're just mad.
You've been sitting here in your crypt. Honestly, when I get woken up,
I'm also mad, so.
You've been sitting here in your crypt for however many thousands of years. Go back to sleep. I don't need you. You don't need me.
I just want to steal your stuff. I'm just walking through.
Yeah. You don't need this, Jewel. You're a skeleton.
So Kaylee, anyway, today,
let's get into what's going on. So this is our episode one of season 3 of The Ink Sink. Kaylee, we started this in 2020 as a school project of mine, and you have very gamely kept on even after long after school has ended.
I have love and friendship, and I enjoy learning things, so this is wonderful. It gives me, like, some direction in my, like, endless screaming into the void, so.
Good. You know what? I'm happy, and I love that for us. Why am I saying that just, so much today?
Just doom scrolling is not as satisfying as actively having a purpose.
So. At shouting into the void about the doom that we're seeing. Yeah, absolutely. It sucks, but it's here. We have upped our subscriber count by multiples.
Yes, we have.
Which is awesome across all of our platforms. Huge shout out. Thank you all for listening on Spotify and YouTube and subscribing on our Substack. And I assume Apple Podcasts, they don't give me a lot of information, but thank you for listening there for those of you that do. That's so awesome. Thank you so much. And if you are just coming to our podcast now, welcome. This is season 3.
And this is a good episode to start on, honestly, because we're going to do kind of an overview a bit of what season 2 was.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some of our favorite stories from season 2 and then talk about some of the things that we missed, some of the things that we loved, some of the things that we hated. So this is going to be a really good one.
Yeah.
You ready to get into it?
I am.
Let's do it.
Yeah. I actually did my list chronologically, so I have some of the oldest articles from 2023 at the top of my list. So when Susan Meechan posted JK, I'm not actually unalived.
Oh gosh, yes.
That was what a time to be a person. Just jumped out at me when I was like looking for what was one of the weirdest things I wanted to talk to.
Give us the cliff notes for people who were not paying attention or who just tuned out of that bullshit.
Sure. So there's an indie romance author, Susan Meechan, who apparently on her account, like, somebody came on and said, I'm her relative, she has passed away. And then everybody sort of banded together, her fans, they got her last book edited and published, they sent in money for her funeral, like, it was a lot of crowdsourcing coming together, friends were very sad. Then there was silence for, I think, 2 years.
It was crazy because, like, it was one of those moments where you're like, this is the good promise of the internet, like, that people come together, we have fans and friends and people who don't even know each other pulling together to do this one good thing. And it was one of those things where you're just like, this is really heartwarming and wonderful.
And then this is why we can't have nice things. Because then she was just like, actually, I'm still alive.
Yeah.
And the only explanation shared, and I mean this very clearly, like, I hadn't seen any updates about this. Like, my family did what they thought was best. People were like, that's nice. What happened to all the money that we sent and all of the things that we did and, all, you know, any of that? And big fat nothing.
Yeah.
So people sometimes just don't want to be generous because they've been burned before. Yeah. And it's hard to really say anything to that because you've been burned before. I get it. People are liars.
And it was a real burn, too. They were like, hey, what happened to all of our money?
Good friends, too.
Yeah. And she was like, screw you for asking about the money. I was dead. How dare you? And they're like, you weren't dead.
We didn't ask until you weren't dead is the thing. Yeah, like, when you were dead, it was fine. But now you're not. And that's weird and a little gross and exploitative.
Oh, so gross. So gross. Oh, my God. That was so insane. You were right. I totally forgot about that. That started us off. When was that? In January?
That was January 6th.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Kicked
kicked
the new year off.
Yeah.
In a way.
Absolutely.
In a way.
Heck yes. Oh my God.
Go. You give me one of your articles that you want.
Yes. Sorry.
I can give you another one, but like.
I will say that the biggest thing that we were covering over the year was the book ban situation. Yeah. So we saw a bunch of states saying these books are not allowed in schools, and then predominantly, the books that they picked to say these aren't allowed in schools were books about LGBTQ history, LGBTQ people, LGBTQ concepts, and then African American history, African American people, African American concepts.
It's so transparently targeted.
It was transparently targeted. And then a lot of it was very veiled. One of the big proponents of this was the Moms for Liberty Union, and they were saying, oh, we're trying to keep porn
out of schools. They banned the Bible.
Yes, so in
of course,
in one of these cases, there was a school system that was like, okay, and decided to do malicious compliance, take these people at their word, and take out any books with references to sex, and they took out the Bible because they're like, hey, guess what?
It has sex.
References to sex abound.
Sexy sex. Like, not just references, like, and then they bone, but, like, lurid and graphic descriptions of people, like, being sexy at each other.
Yes, and sometimes non-consensually. Yep. And it was like, this is one of those things where you have to consider the fact that people are going to do what you tell them to do, but not in a way that you want them to do it, because then the Moms for Liberty were like, no! And the school board was like, yeah.
We wanted you to do this, but not like that.
Yeah. So, and that's one more thing. Of course, I don't have all the details in front of me, but that was one thing where it was like, oh, this is so stupid. But then we have this other thing that's been trying to make its way through the Texas court system, where the Texas Congress, the legislature of the state, said that every bookstore and library in the state had to read every single book that were in their collections and rate them.
The individual, like, shops and the libraries
would be responsible for that. And we've gone on record saying that we don't hate the idea of book ratings. Movies have ratings. Video games have ratings. Music has ratings. Like, they're not offensive
to us.
They're
a tool to leverage.
But it's something that the publisher should be doing. It should absolutely not be.
Similar to movies.
Exactly. It's something that the publishers do. And you can't just tell your average bookstore, your average indie bookstore, which has maybe 2 employees, to read every single of the thousands of books.
It would be a burden for Amazon. It would be a burden for Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, any major company, let alone a small business or the library, who's paid for by your tax dollars.
Yeah, and that's something that always comes up, is like, well, shouldn't they have read every book in their store anyway?
No! Are you absolutely insane? People have different special interests for a reason, monster.
So in my house, just in this room that we are in right now, which has several books shelves, there is a bookshelf that is entirely my husband's books that he has purchased for himself. And I don't think he's even read all of the books on this shelf. He just liked the vibe, or he liked the idea, or he likes the author. Yeah, he hasn't read them all. He couldn't rate all of these. And he has, honestly, like, probably the ones that he has read, he wouldn't be able to remember well enough of the, like, specific ratings things.
We have come across this multiple times when I've recommended books to people. And I think it's burned us in the past, like me trying to recommend something to you. But specifically, like, I would recommend a book, something to some of my friends. My mom just had romance novels in the house. And so, like, I got really good at skimming any of the sex saucy scenes, yeah. stuff just for important dialogue that might come up later if right. they're doing like a playful interrogate. Guys, right. it wasn't gotcha. Don't only leave romance novels in the house if you've got a bibliophile kid. Like, I'm just going to put that out there. I don't recommend that, but that's what happened. So, like, that's how my brain works. I toss that stuff a lot.
Yeah.
And so, like, when I'm recommending stuff, I'm like, oh, I really like this, this, or this. And then and they're like, oh, well, is there any, like, whatever, like, sex or things that I don't like? And I'm like, well, I don't remember. But, like, also, I don't think so. No, I don't remember that.
Because it never stayed in your brain.
It's gone.
You didn't read that part. It's already gone.
I don't care about it. Yeah. And I filtered it for important details and right. then disposed of it.
And you're not the weirdest human on planet Earth. So, like, presumably one or two bookstore employees are similar.
Probably.
Like, they would also not be able to tell you exactly if there was, like, some specific arbitrary rating system if every single book fell into that.
And do their job.
And do their job, yes.
Anyway.
One of the reasons that people don't like reading is because it takes longer than watching a movie. Like,
go figure.
Yeah, it would take a while for someone to read every single book in any given building. Certainly. In just my house, we have these two bookshelves right here. It would take over a year. Probably easily. Two or three or easily. Four or five to read all of these books and critically analyze whether or not
they had.
It would take
longer than that to critically analyze them, yeah, for sure.
To figure out if they had any of these arbitrary markers of books that aren't okay.
And then
in
what
quotes.
If it's, and how do you objectively define?
Exactly.
You would need that. Anyway, right. So long story short, yeah. This was in the Texas system. It was HB 600, now known as the Reader Act. Mm-hmm. It was passed and then immediately challenged. The yes. challenge was upheld, and then there was a stay as somebody said, actually, no, it shouldn't be challenged
right.
because we don't like that
yeah.
it's not in place.
And then there was an injunction against the stay, which I believe was just upheld.
And they just
there's a whole thing
the
going. Texas is not okay right now, everybody.
They're struggling. So anyway, that is a new thing that we just found out actually this year.
Yes.
So a judge upheld the stay. And basically in the Fifth Circuit, I want to say, I have it in my notes, but mm-hmm. essentially the judge said, first off, it's a totally legitimate stay. It should be upheld. Mm-hmm. Bookstores don't have to do this. Libraries don't have to do this. And when, you know, this actually goes to be reviewed ultimately, it's probably going to be struck down as unconstitutional and causing undue financial burden because, again, of all of the things that Annie and I just said.
Yeah.
Like, there's just... Anyway, so that's heartening. That is hopeful. We're hoping to hear, you know, ultimately that it was struck down.
Yeah.
It's an optimistic thing that happened. So that's... Yeah. So my next one was... Are you ready?
Yeah.
This is also January 7th.
Oh, good.
Spine collector Filippo Bernardini pleads guilty and then avoids jail time but still faces $80,000 in fines and deportation to Italy or the UK, whoever will take him.
Oh my God. Can I tell you, this was one of the main reasons that I wanted to start this podcast is
I know,
to talk
I really
to
wanted
somebody
to
about
throwback.
This.
I like really wanted to make sure we
I
talked
needed,
about this.
I needed to talk to someone about this and no one understood what I was talking about. And they're
I
like,
remember.
Wait, what database email? I don't understand. And I'm like, oh. Yeah, oh. So I made Kaylee research
Social
it and talk about it with me.
Yep. It was great. It was very funny. It was very
oh
funny.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I'm still, you know what? We really should write the screenplay.
Oh God. And
a
make
better
it cooler.
Screenplay.
Yeah.
A better screenplay.
So Filippo Bernardini was stealing unpublished book manuscripts, and he didn't have any rhyme or reason for it, which is why it was so hard to catch him, because he was going after indie stories, poetry, academic stuff, and he was also going after blockbuster fiction, things in big series. And so people were like, who the hell is this person? It was a known thing in the industry that someone was trying to steal unpublished book manuscripts by essentially impersonating real publishing workers and using essentially phishing scams to get their information and then steal these manuscripts. Apparently just because he wanted to read them.
Yeah, no, he just wanted to feel close to the author, which is up fine up until he started getting rude.
He broke the law, but he didn't really hurt anybody, so we weren't super mad about that part. But then he was really mean to a bunch of interns, and that was when we turned on him, and we were like, listen, motherfucker, don't be a jerk.
Yep.
Steal Sad. Things, but be nice about it.
Yeah, there's no need for any, and it's not like the person that he was rude to was even, like, super rude back. They're just like, I know you're not my boss.
Yeah.
Or you're not this person.
Yeah.
And he was just, then he started cursing.
He
was like,
mean.
No, it is. And like, no, you wouldn't be polite to me.
Yeah, right.
And that's God. When he was rude.
Yeah.
But, like, at that point, Ugh. Anyway, so that's the thing that happened. The thing finally closed.
Yes, that's another thing I feel like we, having been raised on good fiction and thrillers, like, we love the gentleman thief. We don't want a jerk out here breaking the law.
Don't be an asshole. If you're gonna be, like, a cool, sophisticated crime, yeah. which this was very sophisticated.
Yeah.
Why do you also have to be a jerk? Like, I feel like you don't need to be.
No.
Anyway.
Sir. So. Anyway, so he got deported. The FBI finally jumped in because he stole a senator's book or something. And then...
Or they just finally badgered them enough. It was something like that.
This had been going on for, like, 5 years.
They've been contacting the FBI a lot, and they're like, nothing's happened, though.
Right, there's no money there's being no exchanged. There's no
demonstrated, like, harm.
Yeah.
Which was... the issue. And then finally, I guess they were just really tired of passing that particular phone call around the office.
I guess. So they finally caught him. The FBI finally got him. And because there was no money exchange and no actual harm, the publishing industry was like, I mean, if he stops, we won't care. And so he had an $80,000 fine, and they deported him to, where was it?
No, it isn't even, like, I looked up to try to follow up on this. There's no follow-ups. It was just, like, Italy or the UK. Like, they're still trying to figure out who was willing to take him at that time. And I couldn't find any articles, like, afterwards what happened.
I love that. They're like, we don't want him. Yeah. He's a book thief. How dare you?
Apparently, the greatest of harm.
They dubbed him, what was it? A Vulture article dubbed him the Spine Collector. We were so mad about that because he does not deserve that name. That is such a cool name.
It is a cool name. Ugh. I think we just need to, like, one step to the left this, write a cool screenplay with a better Way anti-hero better. Or yes. protagonist.
Yes.
It'll be great.
My next one was the... rise of AI and the fall of the next-gen online news sources. So I don't know if you know about this. The Messenger, which was an online news source, which got a lot of buzz when it was first created because it was like, we're going to do online news correctly. We're going to pay all of our journalists. We're going to get expensive journalists on expensive beats. And we're going to do everything that people want from essentially online news. And they folded as of a week ago, which is really sad. Jezebel folded, BuzzFeed News, Vice went down. It was kind of a bad year for these kind of millennial focused online news outlets. And we talked about this a little bit in our AI episode. I don't think that this is 100% at the feet of AI. I think these things had been coming for a while.
I do think it's something similar to what we saw after the pandemic, which in the tech industry, unscalable growth.
Yeah.
And so unwisely planned growth, if that makes any sense, or no plan involved at all. Like, so if you can't predict and plan for, like, problems and how you're supporting your model going forward if things go badly, this is what's going to happen. And I do think that was a lot of what happened.
I think so too. I think there was a lot of also one of the things that I think a lot of companies, especially online news companies, struggle with is the fact that most of the time people aren't going onto your site and then searching for something. They're searching like a Google or a Yahoo or whatever, and then finding the article that they're looking for. And sometimes it happens to be your site. And I think that that's really an unsustainable way to go. And that's one of the things that, like, we struggle with as a podcast too, is like finding or getting to people who want to listen to our podcast is different than getting to people who want to listen to a podcast about the topics that we happen to be covering. And that's just like stumbling onto us. And it's really tough because how do you overcome that? And I think that a lot of people who invested a ton of money as, you know, these kind of techie startups being like, we're going to disrupt news, we're looking at people like the New York Times, who have a big paywall, or the Washington Post, which still has a huge print circulation, and saying, oh, we can do better than that because we can cut some of those costs. And you can't really, because the real big expense, and I think that these people are finding that, is the journalists themselves, because good journalism is fucking difficult.
And it's also time-consuming.
Yeah, time-consuming and expensive. I mean, there's a reason that journalists at the New York Times, well, the ones who are based in New York, are making six figures. But in the meantime, the New York Times has been making record profits and having record valuations over the past several years, including last year. It's on to new highs as of right now, or its stock prices anyway, not that that's a generally, but it's a pretty good metric of how people feel about the New York Times, which is generally positive. So it's one of those things where we are seeing a new media landscape being born right now. And I think that one of the other things that we're seeing is part of that is AI. And we've talked a lot about that. And another thing that I think these techie news companies weren't paying attention to was they were optimizing themselves for that search engine algorithm. And AI is absolutely changing that search engine algorithm, because a lot of people are searching for something and seeing, you know, the auto-generated AI answer. And then they'll be like, okay, I'm done. I don't need to see listicle or a 50,000 word explainer on this thing. I've got the 2-sentence answer that I was actually looking for.
I didn't have to read all the way down 7 yeah. paragraphs in.
Yep, exactly. And again, we talk about this all the time. When I'm doing research on something, I will absolutely go to the last possible page of Google when it's like, there are no more results except for gibberish. Are you sure you want to keep going? But most people won't. Most people just want an easy answer to a question, and they're not going to go down and double check sources and double check like where stuff is coming from and dates and things like that. They just want an easy answer, which is totally reasonable, but these companies were not set up to give them that. So I think that as we are seeing this new era for news, we're also seeing a new era for just knowledge in general, mm-hmm. knowledge dissipation. I don't know where that's going to go, but I think that it's really fascinating. This is the first, I would say, big media disruption change that I have actually been like conscious for. So I am truly genuinely fascinated at what's going on right now.
Like, yeah, 100%, because we're not that we weren't around and for the last, you know, obviously, 30-ish years, give yeah. or take, but like paying active attention now, we're like, I don't want to say less exhausted because that's not true, but thoughtful enough to be aware of and specifically yeah. dialed in as all of this happens. So yeah. we get to see
yeah.
like what's happening, and we're paying attention. We're processing, as things are changing. So I'm going to piggyback off of your AI topic, and my one of the articles that I was, going to bring up for my other favorite article, or another favorite article over the year, was the publishers using AI to upend book recommendations and crawling through and finding older books, public domain books, books that hadn't, like backlist books that maybe hadn't gotten as much attention at the time for whatever reason,
yeah.
but like might actually be really interesting to people.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was actually really cool use of yeah. AI and showcases ways in which the industry is being upended.
Yeah.
In a positive way.
Yeah, it's fascinating. We read that. I want to say that article that we talked about or that I sent to you was like a thinly veiled like PR thing, but about a genuine
actual thing that.
Yes. And I think that's true. Like a lot of times publishers don't pay attention to books that had come out years ago and then hadn't like had any big marketing push or hadn't had like a viral hit. So they just kind of been sitting there in, a warehouse or whatever, or on a drive or whatever. I think that's really cool. I think that one of the things that AI probably is very good at is marketing. And I think that hopefully we see it being used for good in this case.
Absolutely. 100%. I have so many more.
Sure. Okay. Keep going. Let's do it.
Let's see. I thought this was kind of interesting. So this is just something. So the actual note itself is more just I wanted to just as a discussion point, because there's been a lot of fear and frustration as different job cuts have come through. Actually speaking, as far as it goes, the publishing industry is probably right now, even with the job cuts that have happened, from what I can tell from the U.S., from United States statistics anyway, from like what the government can track. So publishing is actually part of the information statistics that they have for their census. I have a link that you can review that kind of summarizes this. Okay. It's actually up.
Oh.
Over since it's up about as high as it's been, or roughly for in the last, say, I want to say 15 mm-hmm. years. Like it's about there mm-hmm. again. So, I mean, it's a yes. I think we keep in mind that, not to like say that the news does this, but the news does tend to sometimes when, something that is, objectively bad, which is a job cut happens, mm-hmm. to focus on that as a portent of doom.
Mm-hmm.
But this actually looking at the figures, it does seem that generally speaking, job, at least percentage wise, job cuts are not actually like, it's not as bad as maybe we are being
sure
portrayed to see.
The long-term trend is still up, but the short-term mm-hmm. trend is down. So hopefully there are places for these latest layoff peoples to go. Layoff peoples. People who have been laid off.
Yes.
To go.
Yeah. So this was specifically, it was in relation to one of Bloomberg's posts that they were like, they had fired some people, but they were going to hire 1,000 more or something. So there's no real easy way to track whether Bloomberg actually, right. you know, put up. But like, generally speaking, the industry recovers very quickly. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time, just in general, you'll find that something like we had discussed, unscalable growth, and they'll be testing things out.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so that's not great for the people involved, yeah. but so anyway, I just thought that was interesting and I just wanted to bring it up. So it was, I did some in-depth research just to get to that confirmation because the statistics are confusing and I had to go to the website for the government and I don't love doing that, but they had numbers. They had numbers for me. They had figures and graphs.
Yeah. So. Love that. They're so nice in that way. I appreciate them.
But what about you, Annie?
The next thing I wanted to talk about was libraries and librarians.
Yeah.
So one of the things I think that has become much more publicly spoken about this year is how much librarians have to do. It's not just, you know, standing behind a circulation desk checking out books. A lot of the time it's organizing programming, creating spaces for individual people or groups of people, or, I mean, sometimes buying books. Sometimes getting rid of books, organizing collections, creating collections. My library specifically has a monthly small business counseling thing that a librarian had to go out and get people to commit to and schedule and like get people in and doing their thing. So librarians do a lot, and also it is a free public space, which means that it has all of the problems that any other free public space will have. They have are probably, I would say, as much if not more on the front lines of the drug crisis right now, and the homelessness crisis right now than many other public places, because they don't turn people away unless they're being a nuisance. So if someone's just sleeping in the library, they're like, yeah, okay. For now, it's fine. I mean, as long as they're not like creating a problem or taking up space where another patron needs to be sitting, or if they are taking up space in a crowded room where like maybe disabled people aren't able to sit, like then they'll be like, can you move? But I didn't know this and I was reading up on this. Apparently, a lot of homeless shelters will kick you out during the day. Yeah. So homeless people don't actually have anywhere to go most of the time during the day. So a lot of them will go to the library because it is a free public space and there's a roof over their heads. And I was like, that makes a ton of sense. I mean, maybe it's just me being dumb, not realizing that before, but I was so happy to see that that made sense. And I am on a big subreddit of librarians and they talk about this all the time. They're like, yeah, like if it's a huge problem, you know, sometimes we'll call social services or something like that. But usually, you know, if the guy's sleeping, he's sleeping. It's not like he's doing anything bad. You know what I mean?
And also you run the risk of things getting complicated and bad for mm-hmm. that person and yeah. like making what is not a good situation for them that much worse.
And of course, the ones that obviously made me the most sad was that a lot of library systems are requiring Narcan training. So if anyone overdoses on specifically opiates in the library, they can come in and help. And the fact that they needed to do that is so sad and emblematic of the opiate crisis in this country. And I was really sad to hear that. Fortunately, as more attention gets on this topic, hopefully there will be more funding, maybe.
Funding and support. And I think, to be fair, I've seen that conversation about librarians taking on more and more of our social responsibilities, like in that space, over the last few years. So I think I'm really glad that it's continued to be a more and more spoken of topic. It's in the medical community, it's in that space, and I think it's, and obviously we see it sometimes a bit, but I think we're seeing it more and more outside of that space, which it needs to be. It needs to be something that we're all aware of, because it is an issue.
Agreed. So. And I think that another thing that we kind of gloss over, but one of the biggest group of readers is kids, and a lot of kids go to libraries as their default after school care. My local library is essentially nestled between an elementary school, a middle school, and a high school, like right there. So teen time is very important, and they are like,
it's also a good space to go if they're at the library. Safe, they're not like in other places where they could get hurt or they could
yeah,
not be at loose ends and do something exactly with low impulse control that'll get them in trouble.
But I do think that providing after school care and homeless care is a thing that we should not be asking librarians to do at the correct same time. But it is a thing that they are doing, and honestly doing well at the moment. So shout out to every librarian in existence. 100%. Especially also having to deal with these book bans and people coming through and acting like it's totally okay for them to throw a fit in the middle, a tantrum in the middle of the public library.
If you have not reserved a soapbox with that librarian, take your soapbox and leave.
That's right.
Go away.
Why don't you do one more, and then we'll move on to our favorite books of the year.
Absolutely. So I actually just want to give a shout out. Dolly expanded her imagination library.
Yes,
again.
Dolly!
So she added Alabama and Washington to her states.
That's right.
And I just want to continue to shout out to Dolly Parton for being just a stellar human being who really does her best to live her morals and support literacy and generosity of spirit.
Absolutely. Do you want to give the cliff notes of what the Imagination Library is for people who don't know?
Yeah, so Dolly Parton has a program that in the participating states where it's she works in coordination with the states and donations and her own funding that she provides to send out participating families that have children up to, I think, 5, like a free book a month. And you're able to get that at no charge. It just comes to your house and you get it up until your kid is 5. It's just such a wonderful program to help engage with your kids, because reading with your kid is another right way to bond with your kid. It encourages them to love books and to love learning which is a great start when they start school. Like, it's already like really helping them. And I just, hats off, Dolly Parton. Good for you being a great person.
Hell yeah, Dolly Parton. All right, moving into our favorite books of the year. So we did this last year, so I'm going to give a quick overview. We are not talking about the favorite books released this year. We're talking about our favorite books that we read this year, or in the past year of season 2, so 2023, basically. Do you want me to start? Do you want to start?
I will let you start.
Okay. Well, Kaylee, you're going to really like mine. We're going to do top 2.
Perfect.
One of my top ones of this year was Swordheart,
yeah,
by T. Kingfisher, yeah, which is the story of a widow as she lives in a fantasy world. It's a fantasy, like, play. I don't know what you would call that. High fantasy, I guess? Is that what that's called?
Yeah, there's magic. There's gods and stuff. They're just off camera. Like, they're
Yeah.
It's a bit low fantasy, except for one really high fantasy part where right. They just go into like a pocket realm.
Yep.
And then they're like, and then we're done with that. And they're like, wasn't that weird? And she's like, let's not talk about it. Yep. That was really weird.
Absolutely.
It's very funny.
This widow who has been essentially kidnapped by her own family because she's coming into some money and they want her money, finds a magic sword and hijinks ensue. And the sword falls in love with her. The sword is a man. There's no way to describe that without making it sound super fucking weird. But the sword is a man, and the man falls in love with the woman, but he's a sword, so she deals with that? It works out. Anyway, I have to say I absolutely loved that book. Thank you so much for finally making me read it.
Yes, you're so welcome. I'm so glad that you finally read it. I was like just chomping at the bit. I recommended that to our friend Barb as well, because I know she'll love it.
Oh, I absolutely
it's right up her alley.
My sister-in-law, Holly, is also a huge T. Kingfisher fan. Thanks for listening, Holly. And she was like, oh my God, you guys are talking about T. Kingfisher. Like a while ago when I saw her, and she's like, I love those books. They're great. 10 out of 10. That was probably my favorite book that I read this year. I don't know when it was released, but I read it this year and it was fantastic.
Awesome. I'm so glad. So mine kind of fulfills the top 2 because it's actually 3 books.
Kaylee, that's cheating.
I'm sorry.
You can talk about one.
I will talk about the first one then, I guess, which is fine because it's all the same title. So this is someone just did a fantastic book series that I literally read cover to cover. I read all of them. I'm not this unspecified number of books that I'm talking about right now. I mean, it's definitely only one. While I was on Thanksgiving travels with my husband. Beware of Chicken.
Beware of Chicken.
It was very heartwarming, but also hilarious. And so, like, I just kept narrating things that were happening to Alex.
Oh, so, that's like, the best.
Specifically, but then I'd also give him the overall recap. And so, like, he also wants to read them now. So I want to get, I'm getting physical. I bought the books and I'm getting physical copies. Like, I think you can request them to be printed. So I'm thinking about doing that as well.
I love that.
I would love to loan them out. They're just fun. They're just fun and good.
What's the story? I'm a plot person. You gotta give me a plot.
That's fair. So it's essentially an homage / parody combination to the high fantasy Chinese literature tropes in general. So, like, a person that is studying, like, martial arts in like at one of the schools of the fantasy China that have, like, kung fu schools is in a fight with an upperclassman and dies for a second, and his sort of partner soul from our world happens to just accidentally fall in through the cracks. They wake up together, and so the main, like, our person is just like, nope, I need to leave. I can't be at this school. I just want to be a farmer. I don't want to be a high fantasy warrior person. And so he just leaves. There's a way to do it, so he does it. And then he just goes and he's like, where's the, like, weakest, nicest place with the least amount of nonsense? And he goes there, and it takes a while to get there.
To go be a farmer there?
He wants to be a farmer. So he buys some land and then just starts farming. So
in this fantasy world?
Uh-huh.
I love
and
that.
He buys chickens,
that's
roosters.
That's very Skyrim.
Starts, oh, yeah. 100. It gets better because a lot of the tropes still happen, but they don't happen to him, per se. Like,
oh,
he
God.
Becomes the hidden old master, even though he's literally just, like, 20.
I love that.
His rooster becomes, like, the focus. He's, like, his first disciple, Rooster. It's so good, Annie. I can't describe. I don't want to spoil it. You have to read it. It's just a charming, lighthearted. It will make you feel good.
Okay.
Even not, and it's not all great. Like, there are some bad things that happen, but they are overcome, and you're
moving skipped
forward.
Those, so you don't remember that.
Those stuck with me because it was good. They came together as a family, and, like, aww, they defeated bad things together, and they overcame things. It was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the unspecified number of those books.
You can count that as your one book, and then you have to give us another book that's
I have
not
to
one of
think,
those.
Because I was not prepared, because I had three. I had three, Annie.
Kaylee, you are a cheating cheater.
I am a cheating cheater. You're right. I've read. I'm just going through right now and trying to figure it out. But anyway, what's your second one?
It was difficult. It was a tie for me. So I'm just going to talk about one, but I am going to do an honorable mention at the end. My second book of the year is another fantasy, but it is a retelling of the Iliad. It is called The Song of Achilles by Madeline Miller. And it is so good. I cried. I laughed. I loved. I cried more. It is it's a retelling of the story of the Iliad from the perspective of Patroclus, who is in the Iliad. He is kind of vaguely defined as Achilles' companion. In certain interpretations, it's his cousin. In certain interpretations, it's his manservant. In this, it is his companion and his lover. And they train together and laugh together and go to war together.
You cried a lot at the end.
I cried so much. So it's not a spoiler. Obviously, the Iliad is, like, one of the oldest stories in the world.
Also, this particular version has been out for a bit, I'm pretty sure.
Oh my God. Speaking of, this is totally unrelated. There was a there was a post on a subreddit. I think it was just Our Books. And they were like, it was like, spoiler, but the title was, I just read the Epic of Gilgamesh. And then it was like, I have some questions about it. And it was like,
spoiler.
Someone was like, you put a spoiler on the oldest known piece of fiction of humanity.
We found something older, but that was like last month.
Yeah, right. I love that they put a spoiler. And then the first comment is, you put a spoiler? A spoiler tag on this?
What if somebody has a writ? No, look, yeah, 2 days and it's done.
It's fine.
That's pretty funny. That was very genuinely sweet of that person.
It was very sweet. Anyway, totally unrelated. Back to the Song of Achilles. So, yeah. So, this isn't a spoiler, because obviously the Iliad is something that we all have to deal with, or at least all in the American school system have to deal with in high school. Yeah. So, Patroclus and Achilles do die at the end, and they are buried together as Achilles requested. And it's like the sweetest, most beautiful thing. Oh my God, it's so good. So I will say, like, one of the things that they do talk about in the Iliad is that there is a prophecy that says that at the end of the Trojan War, Achilles will die. And Achilles has throughout this, so, and also, you know, the Trojan War takes like 10 years, and Odysseus figures out, realizes that Achilles is just being like, I don't want to die. So as long as we just don't finish the war, I'm not going to die and I can live here with my boyfriend on a beach with some friends. That's fine by me.
Sounds like a party.
Yeah, right. Achilles is like trying to, I mean, obviously I'm totally paraphrasing and this is like one small scene in the book.
He was just finger gunning at Odysseus the whole time. Oh, damn it.
Funny enough. And then Odysseus comes and he's like, listen, bro, we got to make this stop. And Achilles is like, fucking make me. And then things happen. Patroclus dons Achilles' armor. Hector kills Patroclus. And Achilles rages. He kills a god on the way to go kill Hector. Hector dies super horribly. It is so sad. And then Patroclus's ghost lingers until their ashes can be buried together. I cried. I cried so hard. This is a trigger warning. I cried so hard. There is, I will say, trigger warning, there is some non-consensual sex, but it's more non-consensual in that we have just been married, we know neither of us likes each other, but we're going to do this kind of thing. So they both consent intellectually, if not enthusiastically. So gray area. There's obviously a lot of death and destruction as well. You know, some violence, obviously tons of violence in Song of Achilles. It's not all fluff and fluff, but my God, the fluff will make you fall in love with this baby child monster who is 20 by the end. Like, but you always, because you meet him when he's like 8, and you just fall in love with that child that he was, and he falls in love with Achilles, with the child that, essentially, that he was, and they've just been together forever, and they love each other so much, and it's like, I cried. Anyway, honorable mention for a book called All We Can Save, which is essays about the climate crisis and how women have and can and will do more to save the world.
Absolutely. That's a good one. Mine are all just like fiction. I don't...
Well, I mean, I did two fiction.
You did.
I did two fantasy specifically, so...
That's a good point. Good point.
All right, go for it.
My top second out of four.
Mm-hmm.
Camp Damascus.
Oh, good. Yes.
Camp Damascus. I was thinking about, like, that was this year, right?
That was this year.
Yeah. Such a great... Oh, I don't love even, like, sci-fi or horror or anything. And it wasn't really sci-fi, I should say. So I don't love horror. I don't love horror.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so good. And I loved the main character. And I loved her relationship that she reclaimed. And...
Oh.
The friendships that she made, and I'm so interested for book two. Like, yeah. There has to be. Like, it's clearly set up for a sequel, so I'm really, really excited about
that. I didn't see
that.
How it did after it released. Did you? Do you know how
it did? I didn't look. I'm hoping.
Let's look. I'm gonna look.
That's a good question.
We should look.
Yeah, for sure.
You can hear more about that in our ARC episode.
Right. While Annie's looking, my honorable mention is an older title that I finally purchased, which is A Guide to Troubled Birds.
Yeah.
Which was, it's not even, it's a thing. Sure, a thing. But it was bound as a book. I enjoyed that. It was very interesting. I really actually liked the intersection between the various sorts of media. So it was, you've seen some of the memes online of like the bird looking at you, and it's like a paintings of birds, and like at least one of them's like, the risk I took was calculated, but man, am I bad at math. So it's basically those pictures. That was where those memes originated from. And then there's also short microfiction, basically, or short stories, depending on how long it is, mostly microfiction, that is similar or based off of or following immediately from those pictures.
That's right.
Very, very neat. I really enjoyed that collection.
So Camp Damascus was a USA Today bestseller.
Of course it was.
An indie bestseller. It was ranked the best book of the year by Vulture and the best horror book of the year by Esquire and Library Journal.
Yes. Good for you.
It was also an indie next pick. I didn't realize it was published independently.
Oh, yeah. No.
I don't think it was. It was published through Tor, so not sure what's going on there. But still awesome.
I wonder.
I think it's maybe just on Chuck Tingle's cachet. Because I think you can be an indie author.
I think, yeah, I was going to say that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Because he does all of the other publishing.
I love this blurb. From beloved internet icon Chuck Tingle, Camp Damascus is a
searing... That was the only PG thing they could say about Chuck Tingle.
Camp Damascus is a searing and earnest horror debut about the demons the queer community faces in America, the price of keeping secrets, and finding the courage to burn it all down. Ugh, and that's such a good description of what it was. It was so beautiful. I also loved, one of my favorite lines from that book was when she goes and she raids her shrink's office and she's just like, listen, maybe I don't have like XYZ mental illness that the shrink thought she had, but she's like, but I definitely have autism. Even I know that.
It was so
not in any
good.
Of these notes.
I don't think he's a real doctor.
I don't think he's a real doctor.
I think he just bought that lab coat.
That's basically what that scene
yeah,
was.
100.
It was so
oh my goodness.
Good. Oh my god, it was fantastic.
It was pretty great.
Kaylee, welcome to season 3 of the Ink Sink. What are you
Happy
looking
to
forward
be here.
To this year?
Having more mental energy and like space in my brain to read more.
Yeah.
I really do like to read.
Do you?
I do. And I don't do it as much as I like because of just being exhausted yeah. after, like, mentally exhausted after work. Mm-hmm. And I love my job, don't get me wrong. But I'm looking forward to just renewing myself and having more mental energy and reading more. That's what I'm looking forward to. What about you, Annie?
I am looking forward to this Texas book ban thing being put
finally
to bed.
Finally done. hopefully, finally, we get at least one good thing. Mm-hmm. And again, I just want to circle back on something that we had said earlier. We don't necessarily have any issues with ratings.
Yeah.
But one, you can't just say, I want it, and then not actually legislate that demand without definitions.
Yeah. So, like, to be clear, I don't know if we said it, but, like, there were no, like, actual criteria. It was so vague. It was just like, you need to rate it as being appropriate or inappropriate. And it's like, well, what does that even mean?
And what counts as sex?
Right.
What if it's, like, again, we had this
what
issue.
What if it's the picture of Dorian Gray, where they have that euphemism about a bee landing on a flower? Like,
yeah, does that count?
That's absolutely a sex scene. Do you know that? Do you care? Like, what's happening?
Anyway, so long story short, yeah. That should be done hopefully this year. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
And maybe they can try again and do better.
Can I give you some advice for low-key, low-pressure reading?
Yes, always.
I do this periodically when my brain doesn't work on reading anymore. I check out art books from the library. I recently checked out a book of just art about cats.
I love it.
It's fantastic. It's called Cats Rock. Cats in pop culture and art. And it's just a bunch of different artists and their collections about cats. Y'all should read. There's a section on Pusheen and a section on Catwoman.
I love it. What a swing.
It's amazing.
What a swing.
And right. There's a section on, like, there's fine art and abstract art and, like, beautiful sculptures and stuff as well, obviously. But there's also just, like, it's just art about cats and then interviewing the artists about why they put cats in there and do they have cats and what are their cats' names. Like, and I'm just like, you know what? This is what I want. I
Sometimes
want to read
you
about
just
this.
Don't. Yeah, your brain just needs a little, yeah. little that's a good idea.
10 out of 10.
I've never done that.
You can just look up art books and it'd be like, you know, Picasso. Just, like, look at Picasso pictures. And there's a couple pages of text, but mostly it's just pictures that, pretty pictures.
I like that.
I mean, look at the pretty
what
pictures.
A good idea.
Also, fantastic. Speaking of, did you see Margot Robbie and her stylist are releasing a book of her looks from the Barbie press tour? I'm so excited.
I did not. I am pumped.
I am going to get that the
I'm
second it gets to the library.
100%, yes, 100%. Oh, man. This is something that's just depressing. Take this out later. But did you see the wins from the award ceremony the other day?
No.
Yeah. Ken won. Best
song,
something like that. Yeah.
Oh,
it's
there was
Critics Choice Awards.
Oh, Critics Choice Awards. Okay, well, fuck the critics, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I was like, are you that's a you did that happened.
Yeah,
it won. Not even like supporting song, like whatever, it was the
best song
written for visual media.
Was there a Disney movie this year? Was there just not a Disney
there
movie
wasn't a Disney
year,
movie cause... and apparently they didn't hear Billie Eilish's song from that movie also, which was so good.
I haven't watched the movie yet.
And so moving.
I want to watch the movie before I listen to the soundtrack.
You should.
Because I'm weird like that.
I really
read the book before
it.
You watch the movie. Watch the movie before you listen to the soundtrack and then just listen to the soundtrack on repeat.
I do it differently.
How do you do it?
If there's a movie, I watch the movie first because typically, consistently, the book is better.
Uh-huh.
And I'm less mad would do it in this order.
Ooh, that's a good point. Yeah, so you're not just like, oh, they left all this stuff out. You're just like, that was a good movie. Now I'm going to go read the book, and that's going to be good, too.
And it's going to be even better.
Yeah.
And it's just going to be just improving my whole day.
There you
know?
Go.
It's just how...
That's probably good. You're probably better at this than I am.
I don't know about that, but I've just gotten better at making sure my brain is I've filtered out some of my triggers for making my brain unhappy.
Smart. That's what adulthood's all about. Don't let the world bring you low.
Agreed. That's a good coda.
Don't let the world bring you low?
Yeah. Like, if you figure...
You're stealing my coda for your Kaylee coda? No, get your own Kaylee coda. She's a cheat and cheater, everybody.
Oh, God, this is an Annie coda episode.
All right, I'll take it. Don't let the world bring you low.
Yeah. Figure out what makes you happy and take it. That was a good one, Annie.
Thank you for listening to The Ink Sink. You can follow us wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us wherever you get your social medias, as long as your social medias are on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest. And you can also support us wherever you support people, as long as you're supporting people on Spotify, Bookshop, YouTube, Substack.
You can also just like support us with vibes, but
send us vibes.
We also appreciate that if you just, you know, need a vibe.
You can also actually join us and talk to us if you would like on our Discord. $1 a month on any of our support platforms will get you an invite onto our Discord, and you will love that. We're pretty great. We've been talking about Dune lately on the Discord.
We've had a pretty sick popcorn receptacle.
Yes. Anyway, you can support us on Ko-fi. Buy us a coffee on Ko-fi. You can support us on Spotify, both of those for as low as $1 a month if you would like to. You can also buy any of the books that we have talked about through our bookshop storefront, and if you do, disclaimer, we do get a small portion of the proceeds, but more importantly, all purchases on bookshop.org go to support independent bookstores. So your neighborhood bookstores, the non-Barnes and Nobles in your life, and you want to support those. Just trust me that you do. And if you want to just leave us a comment or talk about the show, feel free. We post all of our stuff on Instagram and Facebook and Pinterest for reasons unknown. I just like Pinterest, y'all. Stop coming at me.
Infographics are fun.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Have a good one.